Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. We're sitting alongside president and founder of the Hoban Law Group, Bob Hoban. Today we're talking about the value of education, and we are joined by the host of the Cannabis Voices podcast, medical cannabis writer and author, Mary Biles. Mary, thank you for being here with us today.
Oh, it's great to be talking to you guys. It's a real thrill. Thank you for having me.
Well, we're so grateful for you staying up late and joining us. We know we're talking to you from the United Kingdom. And if you could, real quickly, just give us a bit of an update for yourself on how things have been over the last couple of months and if they seem to be getting any better.
In the context of the coronavirus, it's been... I spent most of the last 2 months in quite a small flat with no outside space, just kind of, ploughing on with my writing, really. In the UK, we're at a sort of very delicate stage where everything is starting to open up. But I think this is such, unknown territory that, they're very tentative steps and hoping that, things continue to go in the right direction. But, we just don't know.
Well, as a writer, sometimes being hunkered down is not the worst thing. I guess it did probably, and maybe the deadline for the book was way before, but maybe it helped out with you finishing up the book that you are publishing. It's being published July 23rd of this month. It's the CBD
book. That's right,
yeah. The CBD book, The Essential Guide to CBD Oil. Give us some background here, Mary. What drove you to write this book?
Well, I sort of was part of the CBD industry for the last 4 or 5 years, and I guess could be considered a CBD insider, certainly in Europe, and have been writing not just about CBD, about other cannabinoids and the endocannabinoid system for quite a while. And there's, there's CBD in the UK, there's just been this huge kind of buzz around it, and I think it's last year, there were figures saying, I think, between 4 and 6 million people in the UK have tried CBD. So that's about kind of 9% of the population. So there are already a couple of books coming out in the UK about CBD. And actually, it was the publisher, HarperCollins, who contacted me. It's a dream to be writing a book. But I think they found me through the writing that I do for Project CBD. In California, and they approached me basically, so I was delighted to come on board.
Well, Mary, talk a little bit about Project CBD, if you would, please. I know you've been involved there, and trying to bring some perspective and to bring some facts to the table from a scientific and medical perspective has always been the goal of Project CBD, and to a certain extent, I think that some of the early CBD companies in the U.S. would go so far as to call Project CBD as a thorn in their side because it brought accuracy and direct information to the table in a field of a lot of unknowns in a place that requires education. So tell our listeners a little bit about that, how it, what you understand about how it evolved and what your role has been with that that report.
Well, really, I've just been involved with Project CBD as a contributing writer for the last sort of 9 months to a year. And for me, when I entered the industry, they were a point of reference because, I literally came into the industry blind. And my boss at the time was like, okay, you just need to immerse yourself in Project CBD because, as you say, they believe in CBD and cannabidiol and the cannabis plant as a whole and its medicinal value, but they're very strong on science. So generally who they have writing for them are scientists, are doctors, people who present the facts and there's no kind of creating kind of fake news or trying to portray the plant as greater than it is. Something that I noticed coming into this world, you might find a study might be published, a preclinical study, I don't know, about a flavonoid. There was one that came out in the last year, a particular flavonoid in cannabis that in the lab showed potential anti-tumoral activity, which is really exciting. Then often that gets extrapolated. The next thing you'll see, I don't know, even in broadsheet newspapers in the UK, that this particular, like this compound in cannabis will be a cure for cancer. So I think a lot of what Project CBD is about is keeping perspective and calling out any kind of dodgy science, actually. I mean, as you say, they have been a thorn in the side for a few players in the industry because I guess, you know, we're playing catch up in the UK and in Europe. I mean, it's the medical cannabis industry has been going along a lot longer in North America, but it is the Wild West. And I think, you know, sort of Project CBD is a beacon, really, to just kind of keep things on track and to promote decent, solid science. And also, it's something I think. As for patients, it's somewhere they can turn to. They have a really great resource where they have per condition all the sort of peer-reviewed studies that exist for particular conditions related to cannabinoids and the endocannabinoid system. So, you know, it's just a fantastic resource. And for me to actually, you know, end up writing for Project CBD, I have to kind of pinch myself, really, because it's a dream. It really is a dream.
Well, no, that's that your passion comes through, and I think that's something that's really what drives people towards certain sources, particularly in this environment. So I want to talk about your book and what you've been working on, but I'd like to do that really against the backdrop of an observation, and that was I participated in the European Industrial Hemp Association conference online, virtual. Unfortunately, we couldn't attend in Cologne this year, just mm-hmm. a few weeks ago, and of course have been involved in the European circuit, so to speak, over the last 2 to 4 years in this regard. It seems to me that despite the European Union's rich history with the hemp plant and with the fact that it's actually had an industry for so long, certainly since the United States effectively prohibited the plant in the late 1930s. Well, the U.S. comes back in 2015 and begins planting hemp and really goes all in on CBD, in large part because of the fact that there was a demand, in large part because these marijuana programs opened up state to state to state, and it was easy to borrow or steal technology from those marijuana industries at $15,000 or $20,000 per unit to begin extracting plant material in the very same way that they were doing it in the licensed marijuana system. And that's kind of how it evolved here in the United States. Prior to mm-hmm. that, we had imports coming in that were alleged to have been extracted from stalk and stem. Another issue that Project CBD brought light to, whether that was accurate, whether technology supported it, that's besides the point right now. But here we are in the U.S. where you can't talk about CBD anymore. If you have a conference, you have an event, or if you're investing in the hemp industry and you're talking about CBD, then you're talking about old news, something that's been saturated and moved on. Whereas in the European Union, despite its rich history and the fact that it's participated and even built the industry over the last several decades, is all in on looking at cannabinoids and CBD. Can you shed some light on why you believe that's the case and what were some of the barriers to distribution, even though it's not regulated? It's not regulated in the U.S. to this very day, yet it's distributed all over the place. Why are we so focused on CBD right now in Europe as the new news?
Right. I mean, I guess you have to remember, I mean, I can only really talk about from the perspective of the U.K. and also Spain, because I was living in Spain for sort of 10 years until quite recently. Certainly in the U.K., I think it's 1.4 million people are accessing the black market for cannabis for medicinal use, but we haven't got an established legal market for medicinal cannabis. So when CBD, which was kind of marketed as sort of legal medicinal cannabis, became available, it just seemed something that was tremendously exciting, certainly for people in the UK. And there was a, you know, I guess the things started to build around. I mean, I kind of came on board in 2015. Things were already, you know, the sort of Charlotte Figge story had broken in the United States. There was a lot of kind of anecdotal reports. There were a few kind of initial companies starting in the UK. And, you know, there were some big players that were starting in sort of mainland Europe as well. And I think it just created this tremendous buzz, this sort of word of mouth. The media started picking up on it as well. Because, we, you know, if you have arthritis or anxiety or any of these conditions that CBD can be effective for, and you don't feel comfortable going to the black market, suddenly this was an option. And yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty much what's been happening across Europe. And I guess as well at the same time, you know, there is an increased interest in wellness and turning to more kind of natural medicine. And I guess all the sort of ducks lined up, really.
Well, Mary, you know, you referenced a figure at the very beginning of our conversation, which is just the boom in CBD oil sales in the UK, that the interest from consumers is exploding. And of course, this is a non-regulated at this point in time industry. And we've seen studies certainly here in Colorado and certainly here in the United States that show that oftentimes, or at least sometimes, what is advertised as far as the milligrams of CBD in a product does not always, it's not always accurate. When they test the product, it's actually shown to be less CBD. There's just a lot of confusion. Is that an issue that you're seeing in Europe as well, or is that primarily an issue that's more prevalent, you think, here in the United States?
No, I think this is a general issue. Just to give an example, in 2019, the Center for Medical Cannabis did a CBD report, and they tested 30 CBD products. Only 38% of them contained within 10% of the CBD advertised on the label. there was, for example, a product that was contained 3.8% alcohol, which would qualify as an alcoholic beverage. And then the sort of perhaps the most sort of shocking product was one that was actually sold in a high street pharmacy chain that contained no CBD at all. So 45% of the products tested contained measurable amounts of THC, which you might think, well, you know, what's the problem with that? Because you often see these figures kind of bandied around. So, you know, in the United States, I think it's okay to have less than 0.3% THC, and it's often spoken about in the UK that having less than 0.2% THC is okay, and that's what the full spectrum products contain. But technically, any THC is illegal and considered a controlled substance, so a narcotic. So you have all these products. Which I, for example, consume. So if the advice that I give in the book, which is, you know, the general advice that in the industry is if you can go full spectrum, and, you know, there are a whole plethora of companies selling full spectrum products at the moment, but they are technically breaking the law. So that's, it's a very interesting situation. There's a lot of kind of grey areas that while it isn't regulated, people are sort of taking advantage of, and I'm happy that they're taking advantage of it, because I think it will be a sadder situation for CBD when from April next year it's very, very highly likely that there will be no more full spectrum CBD products on the market in the UK.
So you just pointed something out that I was going to bring up, and I'm glad you did, and that is the notion of isolated forms that are regulated versus either broad or full spectrum forms. And now, I guess terminology matters here too. When we talk about full spectrum, to some people that means deriving the plant material from its natural state, which would necessarily include THC. Some people say if it includes THC, regardless of how it's derived, then that would be derived as a full spectrum. But you know, there's some disagreement there, but I think technically it would be the former. But The FDA rules in the United States, as they evolve, are based on state rules. And those state rules for foods and supplements ultimately allow for full or broad spectrum products to be utilized with a milligram cap. Now, this hasn't been put into force and effect yet, but that's the direction that we're going in terms of FDA regulation. FDA regulation would suggest that CBD or cannabinoid products are going to be full spectrum or broad spectrum products that are in the food or supplement lane, quote unquote, whereas a concentrated or isolated form of the product would be what's used in pharmaceutical grade or FDA approved medicines. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about the UK and or novel foods across the European Union, you're looking at a regulatory structure that requires isolated forms, particularly with the novel foods designation, unless you can go back and prove, and it seems like it's too late, that these cannabinoids in their natural format existed in pre-1997 foods and supplements. So I know that's a mouthful, but from a scientific perspective, from someone who understands this deeply, don't you see that as a problem, that we could have competing regulatory structures, one that supports isolates, one that supports full or broad spectrum products, and that would seem to interfere with the potential of grand scale international commerce with these products?
Yeah, certainly not a joined up approach, for sure. I mean, the thing is, to be honest, I guess because I'm in the UK, I just think about the people who rely on particular CBD products to maintain their health. So I think this is a difficulty with CBD because it is this huge disruptor. So on the one hand, you know, you could be taking the same product for, you know, well-being, just to kind of, I don't know, manage stress, etc. But someone else might be taking that product, that same product to control seizures. CBD companies can't talk about any of these, you know, their CBD oil has anti-seizure effects. But the reality is that there are people who are taking it for, you know, children for epilepsy or autism, and they're very sensitive to particular formulations. So my concern is, when this change comes in, what's going to happen to these very vulnerable people, basically? But the thing is, they can't bring a light to that, because CBD is just a nutritional supplement. The CBD that, you know, that is available online and is not a pharmaceutical product. So it's a very, very difficult situation. And I am concerned for a certain sector of the population who do rely on CBD products. If you're taking CBD for wellness and managing stress, I really don't think it will matter too much. I think broad spectrum is probably fine. But, you know, it's a very tricky situation to manage.
Well, and I think this is a good place to highlight, you, of course, host a podcast called Cannabis Voices. So you speak to a number of folks who are using all of these cannabinoids, CBD, THC, people who are seeing the benefit of this plant. And maybe you could share with us just an episode or somebody you've spoken to that really stayed with you, touched your heart when it comes to their experience with the cannabis plant.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, actually, you know, the podcast came about from the book, because as part of the book, I interviewed different people about their experiences just with, you know, your kind of average CBD oil that's available, you know, in the shops. And I spoke to some really incredible people that CBD basically allowed them to continue living in some way. But, you know, some people actually, you know, were sort of so desperate, their life, you know, they're essentially disabled because of, you know, terrible kind of chronic pain situation, and you know, were sort of Oral morphine for breakfast, Tramadol for lunch, codeine for dinner, that kind of thing, and CBD, you know, through that they could come off the opiates and get their life back. And it was really speaking to those people. It's one thing when you're a writer and you interview somebody and you kind of, like, you know, you stitch together their interview in an article, or in this case in the book. But when you actually hear people's voices and you hear the emotion, it's something that's completely different. And I felt very strongly that people, patients, but also doctors and scientists need a platform to really tell their stories. And there was one actually from the book that that really impacted on me. It was a little boy called Niall, who when he was a baby had a febrile convulsion. And from that point, he just stopped kind of progressing. He lost any little bit of vocabulary that he had, and he essentially kind of went into the sort of autistic bubble, I suppose you could call it. And he became quite self-injurious, sort of banging his head. He was very anxious. And there was nothing really that doctors could give him, really. I think they did some tests and realized that actually he may be having some seizure activity at night, but still it wasn't something that doctors could give him any medication for. And his mum, Sharon, this amazing woman, through her husband, actually, they I think they sort of probably read about Charlotte Figge and all these children in the United States. They did their research. They found a product that they, you know, had sort of good reports about, and they started giving it to Niall. I feel very emotional telling this story because it just sort of gives me goosebumps, really. But I think it was not much more than a week into taking his CBD oil. Sharon had her first ever conversation with her son. Who said to her, "Mummy, my head doesn't hurt and I'm not scared anymore." So I feel a bit emotional telling the story. He sort of managed, you know, through the, after taking the CBD oil, his language started to come back. He could start to feed himself. He started to, you know, sort of develop cognitively. And, you know, they started to have a relationship with their son really for the first time. So so it's you know, stories like that that really stay with me. But also, you know, I had the great pleasure of speaking to Dr. Alan Shackelford, who was the physician who prescribed CBD to Charlotte Figge, you know, sort of now 6 years ago, you know, a very knowledgeable medical cannabis doctor. But back then, he, you know, he'd never prescribed cannabis to a child. And actually, you know, they hit there. Luckily, he just read a paper by Raphael Mechoulam before Charlotte's mother got in touch, which, you know, sort of showed the anti-seizure activity of CBD. And he just so happened to have found out that in Colorado there was somewhere where they, you know, he could get high CBD, low THC flowers. So it was just this sort of, I don't know, coming together of circumstances, just in the right moment, that meant that, you know, that Charlotte could get the medicine she needed, and you know, kind of medical cannabis history was made. So, you know, it's all sorts of stories, really, but ones that I think are really, really important to be told in people's own voices.
Absolutely. We really appreciate you sharing those stories with us here now. Again, the book is coming out on July 23rd. It's the CBD book, The Essential Guide to CBD Oil. You can pre-order it right now on marybiles.com. Mary, we are so grateful to have had you on today and to speak with us and just share all of this with us. We really appreciate it.
That's my great pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Goodbye now.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Hoban Minute. Do you have any ideas for episode topics or guests? We would like to hear from you. Reach out to us at media@hoban.law and stay tuned for more on the Hoban Minute.